The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
What I like to reflect on this evening is what occurred to me is we've been talking a lot about understanding the teaching, you know, bringing in the kind of a shift of perspective. What does it actually mean, this teaching of not self, and turning the mind towards understanding a very different perspective than we're used to navigating in our usual lives? And what I'd say actually is what occurred to me to bring in tonight is that, you know, not self isn't some kind of practice that we do to try to get rid of something. You know, not self is not something that we, it's not a practice. We don't practice not self to stop some process. There isn't that the instructions actually in terms of observing our experience are to kind of more help us to understand or to recognize that what's already happening, it's already not self. There's nothing any different except a belief of you that, you know, so what it really is a shift of understanding around what we typically believe. We typically believe self to be. And so really we could say that the teaching of not self helps us to understand and have the insight into this perspective on experience, that what we typically think of as I, as me, as mine, is a kind of an illusion, a misunderstanding, a misattribution of the experience that's unfolding, just the kind of the tumbling on of experience, a misattribution of something in that process that is stable, reliable, kind of something that's kind of steady there. And there isn't anything steady in our experience. It's all just this changing flow of unfolding conditions, processes at work. We've talked about various analogies of that. The analogy of the river, for instance, the rainbow is actually the one I like the most in a way. I think in the first week I did tell this story, but I'll just remind you of this. I was on a retreat and I was on the coast of Oregon, wandering the coast, and it was a particularly high waves that day. There had been a storm, but the sun had come out. And so there was a lot of really big mist sprays coming up. And at certain points on the path along the coast, I could stop and stand there and just watch while the spray of mist came up and a rainbow appeared in the mist. And it was enough that it would happen, like I could stand in the same spot, and sometimes I would watch the mist kind of float through and see the like, if the rainbow was appearing here, it'd be like the mist would float through, and then the rainbow would appear when the mist floated through, and then it would disappear, and then another bit of the mist would float through and the rainbow would appear. It looked like the rainbow was sitting there, just like, and the curtains were being parted in a way. You know, that it was appearing in exactly the same place, as long as I was standing in the same place. You know, it was appearing in the same place. It looked like a thing that was being revealed in a way, as the mist would come up and then it would fall away and then there would be no rainbow. But that we know, and you know, it's not that the rainbow is sitting there in the sky. It's not there. It needs the various conditions. It needs the observer, it needs the sun, and it needs the water in the atmosphere. Any one of those three conditions not there, the rainbow won't be seen. And so that analogy, I mean, what we tend to do is to attribute, that's very much what the sense of self is. It's this congealing of conditions that is then, you know, attached, given a name, that's me. And, you know, often I think sometimes we have various patterns or habits that result in familiar contractions, familiar senses of experience. Like, yep, that's me. I felt that before. And so we tend to, like the rainbow, it's like, well, it's there. We think it's there. And it's just, you know, it's like, it's kind of, we kind of feel like that pattern or habit is waiting somewhere, that it's always there, not that it's being created in the moment, like the rainbow is being created in the moment. And so these teachings, the teachings, a lot of the teachings around not self are helping us to understand this perspective, that what we think of as self is not self. It is just this tumbling on of causes and conditions, of patterns, of habits. And so the instructions for practicing, there are instructions for practicing around this topic of not self, but they're mostly, they're not directly aimed. Usually there's a few that are kind of more directly aimed at helping us to understand this teaching. But many of them are much more just like, be with your experience. Notice the impermanent nature of experience. That's a key teaching he gave to his own son. He said, cultivate the perception of impermanence. When you cultivate the perception of impermanence, the conceit I am will be abandoned. So he talks about the understanding of not self as being an insight rather than something we look for. He points to observing our experience directly, and that as we observe our experience directly, we begin to recognize that there isn't a self there, that there isn't, what we think of as self isn't there. So I just wanted to review a little bit the kinds of teachings that support us in beginning to have this understanding for ourselves. The first thing that we talked about in the last weeks was studying what we think of as self, studying what feels like is I, me, mine. When it feels, and that's often, you know, when there's a strong sense of I am, often a sense maybe of self-righteousness or doing things well or doing things poorly, or, you know, just some strong congealing of this is me. That's a great time to be curious about, well, what is it? You know, what actually is it that I'm experiencing here? Does it last? What is the actual experience that I am calling I or me or mine? And what happens there often when we start to look at that is it's kind of hard to pin down exactly what we think of as me, as I, as who I am. It's really hard to pin it down. And that's not a mistake because we can't pin it down. So that's one area of exploration is kind of curiosity about what we call I, me, mine. The teaching of dependent origination, which I haven't talked about in depth in this class, and this may be something that we come back to when I come back from my retreat, The teaching of dependent origination is a teaching that describes how suffering is created in our habitual mind. It's a set of processes, conditioned processes that we tend to, when something is pleasant, we like it, we want it, we want to hold on to it, we create a sense of self around it. This is described in the Buddhist teaching, in this teaching of dependent origination. It's a 12-step series of conditions and kind of patterns that tend to arise when our mind is caught by views and beliefs, caught by greed, aversion, delusion. And it is a description of how suffering comes to be. It's a description of often what we get to look at when we turn our attention to our experience. And so instead of, when we think of, oh, this is me, you know, start to look at it, when we have a strong sense of I or me, when we start to look at that, what we might begin to see is this process of dependent origination unfolding. There's something pleasant that we are holding on to, or something unpleasant we're pushing away, something we're clinging to, views and ideas that I have to hold on to it, views and beliefs. All of this is how dependent origination describes this process of suffering coming to be. This process of dependent origination also, it equally describes how a sense of self arises. Where the place in the chain of dependent origination, there's a term bhava, which means becoming. And that's really kind of the congealing of views and beliefs that kind of orient around the clinging to keep it, to hold it. We could say it's the set of views and beliefs that arise in service of the clinging. And those include usually a sense of self. And so this teaching on dependent origination, which is a description of how suffering comes to be, is also a description of how the sense of self comes to be and how we tend to get caught in believing it as something solid or real. So this is actually the teaching of dependent origination gives us a sense of what is available to be observed in experience when there is suffering happening, when there's a sense of self happening. And so this is really, how do we study a sense of self? When we're studying a sense of self, we're studying this chain of dependent origination. We're studying this process of conditions unfolding. And another piece that feels useful to me, because the single process, the single teaching of dependent origination both describes how suffering comes to be and how the sense of self comes to be, the kind of the attachment or the belief in the sense of self. Sometimes when we're observing our experience, the sense of self is clear. It's obvious. It's, you know, that sense of I need this, or I'm right. You know, that I'm right one is the big one for me. You know, that's a real sense of the I am comes in there. But sometimes what's more obvious is the suffering. Sometimes what's more obvious is the pain of some kind of constriction. And it may not be so useful when that's what's most obvious to try to stop and think, well, where's the sense of self in that? You know, if what's obvious is the suffering, if you're observing that and exploring that with mindfulness, you're looking at the same process, maybe just a different part of the cycle. Maybe you're looking more at the constriction, the clinging, the craving and the clinging part of it, or the suffering part of the cycle. So in terms of exploring how to see into or to have that shift of mind, that understanding of not self, it's not necessary to be looking for where's the sense of self in that. If you're observing suffering, if you're observing and curious about how is this suffering working, what's the tightness there, what's being clung to, you are observing the same process at work. So you don't have to kind of come at it from the sense of self. The teaching of dependent origination allows us to look at any part of that cycle. There's a beautiful teaching that says we can look at any part of that cycle. If we look at any part of that cycle and understand it thoroughly, maybe just the craving part, just that part that goes from feeling to craving. If we see that, the craving springing into being from a feeling tone, and really understand how that comes to be and how that might fall apart. The Buddha says that, or the teachings say that is a place where freedom can happen. So we don't have to follow it through and then see where does the sense of self arise in dependence on that craving. So studying the sense of self could also be, we could think of, you know, we could study the sense of self. We could study what it feels like when there's a strong sense of self. But if what's happening is there's a strong sense of suffering, equally, that's a valid exploration. You're studying the same process. A little bit more directly, using the teaching of not self, the Buddha encourages us to reflect from time to time, bringing in the reflection, using thoughts and the mind, essentially. This is not me. This is not mine. This is not who I am. Or even just, this is not self. This one teaching which takes the six sense bases and says, yep, the eye is not self and sights are not self. And the teaching says, this is how you cultivate the perception of not self. By reflecting, the eye is not self, sights are not self. The sounds are not, the ear is not self, sounds are not self. The tongue is not self, tastes are not self. Thoughts are not self, the mind is not self. But that's using reflection. It's kind of like bringing that perspective. That does require some of this understanding that we've been exploring in the last few months. What actually the teaching of not self means. To drop that in as a reflection, there needs to be some understanding of what the teaching means. And again, it's not that there's nothing there, it's that it's not what we think it is. So there's that use of reflection. It's like bringing in wisdom, bringing in the perspective of wisdom. Now, there's some other perspectives that I find useful. Sometimes I'll use, this is not me, this is not mine, this is not who I am, this is not myself. Sometimes I'll use that. Occasionally I'll use that. But more the understanding of the conditioned nature of experience is very close to the understanding of not self. And so for me, recollecting this is just conditions unfolding. That often feels like, at least for me, has a much more direct kind of shaking or waking the mind up to what's actually happening. Not self feels a little more like a concept to me. This is conditioned. For me, has a little bit more of a direct sense, a direct understanding. And another way to phrase that, Saito Utejaniya uses the phrase, this is nature. And to me, that that really speaks to me. It's like, you know, what's nature? Nature is just conditions unfolding and growing. And, a tree grows from, an acorn in the ground. If that acorn is in soil that's got nourishment, and then it gets moisture, and then it gets sun, that acorn is going to germinate and split open, and then it's going to send up a shoot. And it's a process. It doesn't become an oak tree immediately, but there's this process that happens because of conditions. And that's all expressed in this phrase, this is nature, to me at least. It kind of like really resonates. And so those are also reflections that can be useful. And I find those kinds of reflections useful if I'm a little bit stuck to something, you know, if there's a little bit of stickiness there, or, the mind can't quite have balance around something. I might just remind myself, right, this is, of course, you know, this is nature. Of course, the of course is also another one that I use a lot. And of course is also, you know, connected to conditioning. This is happening, of course, out of the nature of the unfolding conditions. So of course this is happening. That often for me will give a little bit of space to be able to be with something that maybe there was some stickiness around. And so these reflections can support helping the mind to kind of, I was just thinking, it's like, this image just came to me. It's like a tree that grows in granite, you know, a tree that's got, its roots in a crack in the granite. You know, that tree is going to break the granite apart. The power of the growing of that root is going to fracture that solid granite. And it's kind of like that, these reflections are kind of like those roots growing in that granite and kind of cracking apart that belief or that view of this is me. So these reflections can help the mind to recognize experience in a slightly different way. And then the last piece I'll bring in, I wanted to have some time for questions, but we'll see. The last piece, I'll just bring this in briefly. There's a teaching. I'm sure most of you, if not all of you, have heard the teaching from the Buddhist teaching to Bahia, a very famous teaching. The Buddha basically says to Bahia, Bahia comes to the Buddha and says, teach me the Dharma in brief. And the Buddha says, this is how you should train yourself. In the seen is only the seen. In the heard is only the heard. In the sensed is only the sensed. In the cognized is only the cognized. That's how you should train yourself. So he says, this is the basic work of practice. We train ourselves to explore meeting experience in this way of just like bare meeting. That's not easy. It's not easy to do that. You know, in the scene is only the scene. When we see something, there's almost always views and ideas and beliefs and opinions that are there with that seeing. There's perceptions that happen with it. And so, you know, we don't usually just have the scene. It's conflated with all the views and ideas and beliefs and perceptions around it. Now, those views and ideas and beliefs and perceptions we don't necessarily have to get rid of them, but what we have to understand those as cognized experience happening. So in the cognized is only the cognized. So yes, there's seeing happening, and there's the perception that that's a wall. And there's the view, that view is arising around boring wall. Whatever, you know, so there's that, those are arisings in the mind. And so the Buddha just pointed to Bahia, know your experience, in the moment, just the direct experience. Notice where the thoughts are arising, where the perceptions are arising. Notice the sight, the sound, the smell, the taste, the touch. So in the seen is only the seen, the heard is only the heard. The sensed connects to smelled, taste, touch, those three. So it really is covering all the sense bases. And then in the cognized is only the cognized. So things arising in the mind are just things arising in the mind. They can be known as things arising in the mind. A thought arising in the mind can be known as a thought arising in the mind. We don't have to get rid of the thought, but we need to recognize it as a thought arising in the mind. And so this is the teaching. And this, you know, we could talk for a whole retreat on this subject, and I have. but the next piece of that teaching, so this is basically, you know, bare experience, no experience, just in this simple way. The follow-on in that teaching is when for you, in the seen is only the seen, and the heard is only the heard, and the sensed is only the sensed, and the cognized is only the cognized. Then there is no you in terms of that. When there is no you in terms of that, there is no you there. When there is no you there, you are neither here nor yonder nor between the two. This, just this, is the end of suffering. And so to me, the second part is pointing to the understanding and the insight that happens. So we the training is to just meet experience. The understanding, there is no you in terms of that, isn't something we try to find. It is an insight, an understanding that arises through the meeting of experience in this direct way. So really, this is the piece I really wanted to speak to tonight, that the teaching of not self is more of a pointing to an insight. And it's not something we can look for almost by its definition, you know. And the other one I mentioned really early on is, you know, that the Buddha mentioned is like, yeah, notice impermanence, cultivate the perception of impermanence, then the conceit I am will be abandoned. So again, you know, the it's not like cultivate not self. It's notice that things are impermanent. With knowing that things are impermanent, it doesn't hold water that there is something that we take to be I or me or mine.